Let us start. So today, it's okay. I'm going to continue the discussion on the free field and start to apply path integral quantization, or rather functional integral quantization, to the quantization of a real genuine quantum field theory, which is an interacting phi to the four theory, so, with physics in it, because there are interactions between particles and not just free particle. Second quantized, but moving in space. Okay, so first, free field, free scalar field, continued. Okay, so first, I would like to discuss what's happening for higher order correlation function or expectation value of free field, and just show you very briefly that the Wick theorem that allows to relate n-point correlation function to two-point correlation function has a very simple derivation via the path integral, functional integral formalism. Okay, so first, I'm going to draw the famous Wick theorem. And then I'm going to discuss a little shortly what's the connection between this quantum field theory and statistical mechanics. Something that you have seen or are seeing in the condensed matter course and in the StatMec course. Okay. So, first, Wick theorem. So, we have seen that basically, if we have the free scalar field, which is given by an action, which is integral in space of 1/2 of d mu phi, d mu phi plus m squared over 2 phi squared, and up to now I am working in Euclidean framework. Well, basically, that for convenience and not to have I factor, etc. But we know that we can go back to real time just by this trick of Wick rotation. So this is the Euclidean action, in fact. But I'm not going to precise it again. We have seen that basically what we have to compute is a functional integral of the form d phi exponential minus 1 over h bar s of phi. And we can compute a correlation function. And I do not specify the boundary condition, but if not specified, let's say we take periodic boundary condition in space-time, and or the infinite limit, where L is the size of the torus. Okay. So now the question is, so we have seen that basically, if we compute the expectation value between two points of the random variable, which is in the functional integral, and this corresponds to the Feynman propagator in real time, we have seen that this is just the inverse of the propagator. So in notation, this is 1 over minus Laplacian operator plus m squared. Well, there is an h bar at the numerator because there is a between the points x1 and x2, which is a green function of this operator, and which is integral ddk over, sorry, little over 2 pi d ei k times x 1 over k squared plus m squared with x, of course, x1 minus x2. And in fact, as you already did in the QFT1 course, we are going to start to use the diagrammatic language representation of Feynman by representing this object, which is a propagator. We are going to represent it by line joining the two points x1 and x2. Okay, so this is representation of this propagator in position space. Okay. So this is, it is this function. Okay. And we can similarly denote the same object, but its Fourier transform. So if I denote this object by g of x1, x2, in fact, it's a function of the difference. We can take its Fourier transform, and which is a function of k1 and k2, which is just the expectation value of the Fourier transform of each field. Okay? And, well, this is the Fourier transform, in fact. But in fact, now it depends on k1 and k2, but translation invariance is that, in fact, it depends on the sum of k1 and of the difference between k1 and causal. So this has a form 2 pi to the power d delta of k1 plus k2. This is because of translation invariance times 1 over k1 squared plus m squared. So this is the propagator in momentum space. And in momentum space, we are going to represent it by a line. Okay, but this line has an incoming momentum k1 to the right, an incoming momentum k2 to the left. You can view this as a wire, you know, propagating momenta. So there is conservation of momenta along the line. So k1 has to be equal to minus k2, hence this delta function. And the amplitude associated to this line is 1 over k squared plus m squared, where k is the propagator going from this to this. So this is 1 over k squared plus m squared. And you recognize the Feynman rules that I think Dan and Tibra have explained to you. Okay, so this is the propagator. And now the question is, how can we compute easily expectation value of products of a pair of many, many propagators? Okay, in the field theory. So of course, we have seen that this is zero if n is odd. Okay. And Vick's theorem states that if n equal 2m is even, this is just given by the sum of all different pairings of all the points into m different pairs of points of the single propagator, phi of first x, phi of the second x of the first pair, phi of the first, second x in the second pair, etc., up to phi of the x for the last pair. Okay. And this is, in fact, this result is a very general result which can be derived in the functional integral formalism because it's a simple property of Gaussian variable. So it's a property of correlation between independently distributed Gaussian variables. Okay. And well, you have many ways to see this, but well, you can basically you can do explicit calculation. And one way, let me introduce a single way. One way to do that will be useful will be to introduce what is called a generating functional for the correlation function. So this is what we call the partition function. And I'm going to generalize this partition function by defining this in this way. So I take the same path integral, S of phi for the free field. But then I am adding a term with a minus sign so that it's a plus sign here, that I'm going to denote g dot phi, where this means integral over x of some function g of x times the random variable, the random field phi of x, where g of x is a what is called a source term. So it's a function that doesn't fluctuate, just a variable. It's a function. It's a classical function. Okay, so this new integral becomes an integral that is a function of a classical function. So it's a functional of G. Okay? And now, since S of phi can be written as a bit formally, I'm going as a quadratic form like this. So S is a quadratic form in the phi variable. And this is just a shortened notation for this integral on this object. This is short transformation for integral d dx 1 half of phi minus Laplace operator plus m squared sine phi. Then you integrate an exponential of a quadratic form plus a linear term. So you can make just a shift of variable so that you have no linear term, but you have a g squared term. And you get that z of g is, so first it's the integral of the determinant. And we have seen that this is the determinant to be defined properly of the quadratic form with the power minus 1 half. So that's a goal. But then since we have a linear term, we have exponential of which something which is plus 1 half. There is an h bar, and there is a factor which is g minus Laplacian plus m squared minus 1, so the inverse of the quadratic forms, times g. And this is, again, a shortened notation for integral d dx1, or let us write it y1, integral dd of y2 of g of y1, g of y2, times this function, the propagator, g of y1, y2. Since the propagator is a kernel of the inverse of this operator. So that's an explicit expression. And you see that when you expand this in g, you get term over the g, 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 g that contains, so you get a power of propagators. Okay. So now, if you want to compute the expectation value of phi of x1 to phi of xn, this means that you have to add into this big functional integral phi of x1, phi of xn, and divide by the determinant. But you can just insert a phi by taking a functional derivative with respect to this classical field. So this is a function of g. So if you take a derivative with respect to g at a given point, then one phi over h bar falls down. So in fact, this is simply, you can write this as h bar to the power n, and then a product of functional derivative, g of x1 delta over delta g of xn, g of g. So this gives you the numerator of an expectation value. And at the denominator, so you have to take this at g equals 0, but at the end of the derivative, so that you make a derivative with respect to g, so phi falls down from the exponential in front of that. And after that, you set g equals 0 in order to recover. Okay, and you have to divide this by z of g at g equals 0 in order to have a well-defined normalization. So you see that this object is just going to be h bar to the power n, delta over delta g of x1 up to delta over delta g of xn of this exponential h bar over 2 g the propagator times g. And if you take the functional derivative of this object, you get precisely the big theorem. Okay. G equals zero. So big theorem in the language of functional integrals is just a basic properties of correlation function of random variable that obeys a Gaussian probability distribution. Yes?
Aaron, the last line, can you repeat how you got to that expression?
How do I get?
The expression you've written in the last line, the integral over dy1.
This one?
The one below this.
This one?
Yeah.
No, it takes this just as a definition. This is a this is a shortened notation for this. If you view this as a matrix, and this as a vector, and this as a vector, this means, you know, if this was a vector, this would be gi, the matrix element ij of this. Well, there are two g, so that's a bad notation. Let us write this ab, gb. Sum over A and sum over B. If G were, if the component of, if there was a discrete set of component of G.
So all of this is being exponentiated.
And all of this is exponentiated. So this object means exponential of h bar over 2, this double integral. Yes. OK. Then you compute and you get the Vick theorem. And the Vick theorem, particularly important is that if you have 4 points, phi of x1 up to phi of x4, then what you get is a contribution of this. This is point 1, this is point 2, this is point 3, this is point 4, plus 1, 3, 2, 4. Plus 1, 4, the propagator between the point 2 and the point 3. So this is a very well-known graphical or combinatorial representation of Vick theorem. So you have three terms. Okay. And if you go so this is for n equal 4. If you go to n equal 6, well, you can show easily that you have 15 terms. It's just combinatorics. And I think that in general, if you have n equal 2m general, you have, I think, factorial n divided by 2 to the m factorial m terms. So this grows very fast. Yes?
In the exponent of h bar divided by 2j,
yes?
2j is the shorthand notation of that.
Yes. This again is a short notation because I have C. You see, this object G is just the kernel of minus delta plus m squared. Okay, so it's a shortened notation for this. Okay, so you see, Vick theorem is a simple thing to understand in the framework of functional integral. Of course, it's completely equivalent to what it's doing in canonical quantization. Okay, so second point that I wanted to discuss just a brief discussion about the connection between quantum field theory in statistical mechanics. So let's go back to the free field in Euclidean d-dimensional space-time, so RD. And let us introduce a lattice cutoff, lattice discretization. You introduce reduce, so you replace your space-time by a lattice. I introduce some cutoff epsilon, so some minimal distance. Okay, so a point on the lattice is in fact labeled by a vector. So this is going to be a vector with integer components. This is a point. This is the site of my lattice. And so I replace phi of x. I denote it by just a random variable associated to each point on the lattice. So I have a discrete set of random variables. And we have seen that in this case, the action S phi, when it's discretized, becomes a sum over the sides of the lattice of 1/2. Then you have epsilon d minus 2 sum over mu of phi I plus e mu minus phi I square, where e mu and the vector e mu is a unit vector in direction mu. So it's a difference between phi and phi on those two nearest neighbor, plus, then you have so it's a sum over I. So it's basically, this is a sum over all the links of the lattice, plus sum over I of the lattice of m over 2 epsilon d phi I squared. Okay, and the partition function is just integral product of all the site of d of phi I exponential of this action minus 1 over h bar this action. So you see that this partition function, you can just rewrite it. It's completely equivalent to a problem of statistical mechanics. So you can rewrite it as a sum over configuration. So it will be an infinite sum, a discrete sum over configuration of all random variables on the side of the lattice, times exponential of something which can be written as beta, some Boltzmann factor, times the energy of such a configuration. So I am summing over configuration of something. This will be an energy associated to configuration, and this will be some Boltzmann factor. Factor, namely beta, will be 1 over kb times some temperature. Okay. And so this functional integral in Euclidean time can be viewed as a partition function of a model of statistical mechanics at finite temperature. It's just we make a dictionary. The math is exactly the same. So this is a partition function. Partition function. Some partition function. Okay. And so there is a dictionary. You can, as soon as you discretize this quantum field theory in Euclidean time, you can, in fact, you are doing statistical mechanics. And so there is a dictionary. And what is a dictionary? What is a dictionary? So I have a dictionary where to the left I have my quantum theory. And at the right I have a statistical mechanics consistent. Okay, so what's a dictionary? Okay. The dictionary, first the dictionary is that of course space-time variable x becomes the space, namely the lattice. So I have an extended system. I have an extended system. And space-time has dimension 1 plus d minus 1, whereas the dimension of the lattice is d. It's the dimension of space-time. So you see that, for instance, if you are in a one-dimensional, to describe a one-dimensional statistical mechanical system, what you have to do is to use a system where you have one dimension for space and no dimension for one dimension for time and no dimension for space. So in particular, if you have a one-dimensional statistical mechanical system, a chain, then the dictionary is that this is time, Euclidean time. In particular, Euclidean time is just a dictionary with one dimension. Okay, so that's the first important. Okay, now of course, well, the phi high here, the random variable phi high, so the field, phi x, becomes the order parameter of this system because you have some kind of oscillator. So it's a local order parameter, like a spin. Third, very important remark, you see that beta plays the role of h bar. And the action plays the role of the energy of the Hamiltonian. So the action of the configuration plays the role of the energy, the microscopic energy. And you see that h-bar mathematically plays a role of kBT. So the temperature of my statistical system is h-bar, Planck's constant. Okay? And that's a very, well, it's just mathematically easy to see, but it's just a very important, because it means that if you are thinking of this quantum field theory as equivalent to some extended statistical mechanical system, the temperature of quantum field theory is not the temperature of the statistical system. It's Planck constant. And for, in fact, a simple reason. You see, if the Planck constant is very small, it means that basically the system is stuck in the functional integral in the energy with the smallest, the minimal action in a classical configuration. If a system is at a zero temperature, it is stuck in its ground state, classical ground state. Okay. And if the temperature is not different, you have thermal fluctuations. If h bar can be considered as a non-zero parameter, so you are dealing with not a classical system, then you have quantum fluctuation. Yes?
What is the predictive power of this if h is something which is dimensionful?
If h
has dimensions, right? You can change it arbitrarily.
Yes.
So its value shouldn't have any, the absolute value of h does not translate to absolute value of temperature.
No, because in fact, when you do this analogy, for instance, first you have introduced a microscopic cutoff. So there is some scale in it, which is not related to the scale in which you express Planck constant. So you have, when you do this analogy, you have to always to remember how you normalize things. You see. So it's a mathematical analogy, but you have to be to remember what you did with. Yes?
We started out with the action. We introduced imaginary time.
Yes.
And what we got was more or less by accident the Hamiltonian, right?
Ah, you mean yes.
Yeah. I was wondering if that's specific to the coordinates that we've chosen on phase space and the Hamiltonian.
We don't really know. Well,
it's still holds.
We don't really, yeah, we get something which looks like an Hamiltonian because it's, but it's not really the Hamiltonian because you remember, if I am writing something which is the Euclidean action, let's go back to the particle. The classical action for the particle is integral dt, well, basically it will be, okay, m over 2 q dot squared plus of Q, and you may think that this is the Hamiltonian, or rather, this is the integral of the Hamiltonian. So this is similar to the Hamiltonian. But remember, the Hamiltonian is in fact p squared over 2 m times v of Q. This is the classical Hamiltonian. Okay. So the Hamiltonian depends on p and Q. This depends only on Q. And its derivative. So in fact, in the Hamiltonian formalism, there is something called the Hamilton-Jacobi. Jacobi action, if you want. So let me call it also S, which is the integral over T, but not of the Hamiltonian, of P Q dot minus the Hamiltonian of P and Q. And if you take this Hamilton-Jacobi action, which is an object defined in classical mechanics, and look at what is its, take its function, its extremum, you know, apply the Euler-Lagrange principle to this object with H, what you get is two equations because you have P and Q. One equation is P dot equal minus V prime Q. And the other one is Q dot equal P divided by M. So you see, so this object is not completely equivalent to the Hamiltonian that you have to. Because this is in classical mechanics, what is really the Hamiltonian that you have to consider. So it's an analogy, but you can see that this is an analogy because if you start to consider a particle in an external magnetic field, then there are differences between the Hamiltonian and Jacobi because you have to introduce potential vector potential, etc. Okay. So it's an analogy, but you have to keep in mind that it's an analogy. Okay, but that's a very good question. Okay, so let's go back to this analogy. So you see the analogy is that between the temperature of the classical system, of the statistical system, well, is plays a role of Planck constant in our calculation. So it means that quantum fluctuations, if you want, quantum fluctuations have some properties that are the same as thermal fluctuations. At equilibrium. Okay. And finally, we have seen that how do we consider a quantum field theory at finite temperature? So if you have a system at finite temperature, temperature for the quantum system, what we have to do is that we consider one dimension that is time, Euclidean time, and make it periodic. So the temperature with this famous relation, T, the period over h bar equal 1 over kb times the temperature of the quantum system. Okay. So the temperature of the quantum system is the inverse of the size in direction of Euclidean time. So in order to describe a quantum system at finite temperature, what you have to do is consider the corresponding statistical mechanical system, but finite and periodic in one direction. So well, it's quite easy, but one has to be careful. Do not identify the temperature of the quantum system with the temperature T of a statistical system. Okay? Okay. And with this dictionary, you will be able to connect what I'm going to do with what you did in the statistical mechanics system. Okay. So I'm halfway, that's fine. So if you have no special question about the free field, of course I could explain many, many more things, but let's start to address a physical, more interesting system, which is an interacting QFT. So now I'm going to introduce, to discuss interacting phi to the 4 quantum field theory, which is the simplest theory that we can construct. So you have seen, I think you have discussed that at length, so remember, the free field, you know, the free field describes just particle moving, you know, particles with mass m moving in space, in space-time, and non-interacting. And you just quantize the number. So they are quantum particles. They are described by the Schrödinger equation. And you quantize the number of particles. You perform second quantization, but they do not interact. Now, the phi-4 theory means that you have particles, but they have so they are bosons, but you have particles, but they have a contact interaction. So two particles may collide. So you have a contact interactions between two particles. If those particles are like balls, basically, that's the simplest kind of interaction. And in canonical formalism, we have seen that this is described by adding to the action a phi-4 term. Because basically, phi squared is the operator associated to the density of particles. It describes density of particles. And the interaction is proportional to the square of the local density. Because you need to have two particles at the same time to have an interaction. So this is described by a phi-4 term in the action. OK, so I start with a problem with a system now where the action. Again, I'm going to discuss this in the Euclidean formalism, not to have any I factor where I'm going to make mistakes. But so this is, we take the action of the, so let me omit E. You take the action of the free field that I'm going to write S0 phi. And I am adding a term, which is integral over space-time of a term which is phi-4 of x. With a coupling constant that I'm going to write G, which is the strength of the interaction. And I'm going to normalize it, as usual, with dividing by a factorial 4, because it makes calculation more complicated. So G is a positive term. It's a coupling constant. Here are the coupling. And you have to take it G, because it describes repulsive interaction. If you take G negative, it means that if two particles at the same point, they gain energy. So they are stable, they stay the same state, basically. And since you have these particles are bosons, then you are going to have a condensation of particles, Bose-Einstein. So it's a model that can be used to describe Bose-Einstein condensation. But then you have a problem that the vacuum is not maybe unstable because you can create particles. So if the particle starts to condense, number of particles increase, and no. So this is stable. If there were fermions, could have added a negative coupling constant. Okay. So I'm going in, I'm always working in the Euclidean framework. But there are no reason that if I succeed in defining a quantum theory in Euclidean time, I cannot go back to the real time theory by Vick's rotation. And so now, same thing, the partition function is defined by replacing the action for the free field by the action of the interacting theory. So S naught, as usual, is just the action for the free field. So it's integral 1 half of d mu phi squared plus m squared over 2 phi squared. Okay? And so now I'm going to start to explain just the formalism that allows to compute. So the analog of the path integral method or functional integral method, what you did in QFT1 course, which is perturbation theories. How do you express correlation functions in perturbation theory? So correlation functions are going to be defined exactly as we did in generating functionals. So we are going to define correlation function, namely, so expectation value of, and I'm going to write this z. Let's say z1, the point phi of zn, in the interacting theory, as simply defined from the same way, as a functional integral over d phi exponential minus 1 over h bar. Now, the action of the free of the interacting theory times phi of z1 phi of zn and normalized by d phi exponential minus 1 over h bar s of phi. Okay? So this is for the interacting theory. And I'm going to write expectation value for the free theory, the same formula when you replace S. If you replace S by S naught, the action of the free field. So you see that you have the action of the interacting field both in the functional integral in the numerator and in the functional integral in the denominator. And that's because you want to have that the expectation value of 1 is always 1 so that you normalize properly your probabilities or your amplitudes. Okay? Okay, so that's my definition of a correlation function. And if everything works well, if you are able to compute those objects in the Euclidean framework, you perform a Vick rotation back to real time, and you get vacuum expectation value of time-ordered products of the corresponding field operators in a theory that is a quantum theory that is not now an interacting quantum field theory. So the Hilbert space is different. The operator are different, the Hamiltonian is different. Yes?
In order to project out the vacuum and take the limit beta goes to infinity, do we have to assume that the vacuum has zero energy? So that if you have, I mean, how would you otherwise?
We define the vacuum state as the state with the lowest energy.
It doesn't have to be zero?
You are going to see that it will not be zero in this calculation. the vacuum has some energy. But
so
this.
But if you look at the sum that we wrote the other day, you have e to the power minus beta e and a summation. And if beta goes to infinity, the only non zero term we can get to.
No, no. In the calculation I did yesterday or the day before, if the ground state energy of the vacuum was some e naught, then, well, in a functional integral like that, you add an exponential minus
beta
e naught. But they cancel between the numerator and the denominator. See? So in expectation value, in quantities like that, the energy of the ground state is not important because you normalize between. Okay. It's just so you can shift it. What's important in quantum mechanics, in non-relativity quantum mechanics, is just the difference of energy between the ground state and some excited state. You cannot, if you are there, you stay there. Problem with the energy, the definition and the calculation of the energy of the ground state come only when you coupled your quantum theory to gravity. Because then the energy plays a role of a cosmological constant, and it modified the dynamics of space-time. But here I'm always working in RD or Minkowski space 1D minus 1, so my space-time is flat, and it doesn't, there is no feedback between coupling between the my quantum field and my classical or quantum space-time.
All right.
Yes?
Here we are always assuming that there, the energy levels between different number of particle spaces have a depth. Like,
I state that is a gap. It turns out that there is a gap if the spectrum of the theory has massive particles. As you have seen in QFT1 course, in fact, in general, if you write energy as a function of the momenta, here you have some energy that you can normalize to zero, but basically this is energy of the vacuum. Okay, and then, well, this is a light cone, and then you have a first, you have a gap with the one particle state, and then you have higher excited states.
The ground state is not necessarily isolated, like two quantum isolated.
If the spectrum is massive, the gap is isolated because you need energy to create a particle out of the vacuum. If you have massless particle, like in QED where you have photons, then the spectrum starts from zero, and you have to be more careful. But here I'm going to consider the 5-4 theory with a massive mass. Okay?
Can we do the same trick, like theta goes to infinity to present the ground state for the massless
particle? Yes, but you have to be more careful. Because I think. But at the level, this formal definition, yes, it works. Okay, so this is a definition, and how long does it take? Okay, so what is perturbation theory? So perturbation theory means that you want to compute this assuming that G is small. And well, in my course, the reason is that I'm going to present perturbation theory basically because that's the only tool that we have unless we know more in quantum field theory. You are going to see in some advanced course, for instance, course on conformal field theories, that's some special class of quantum field theories that has some properties. You know, you can define things non-perturbatively. So you do not need perturbation theory because, but that's related also, that's the case for theories that are massless. in more massless particles. And there are other special kind of quantum physics that are called integrable quantum theory, theories that have an infinite number of symmetries and conserved quantities, where you can use the fact that you have an infinite number of symmetries to compute things and without using perturbation theory. But in the QAE, in the 5-4 theory, in fact, it has only the usual symmetries of, except in two dimensions, the usual symmetry of conservation of mass and conservation of energy, translation invariance, rotation invariance. And so it's not an integrable theory, and it's not a conformal theory, except if you are in a massless case. Therefore, we have to rely in some way to perturbation theory and eventually try to resum it. Okay, so perturbation theory means expand in powers of in a series, infinite series, in G power K. Okay, so how we do that? Well, in perturbation theory, that's the same idea that what we are doing in the canonical formalism. You are expanding, you are treating the interaction term as a small perturbation to interaction. Okay, so one last point. In fact, d phi, I have not defined what the measure is. And I'm going to take as a measure the measure that has been defined for the free field theory as a starting point. You may ask, perhaps there are some modifications in the measure to be done. And we'll see that renormalization tells you that, in fact, not really, or it can be. Well. But for the moment, I take them as a measure to be the measure that we have defined for the free field. But if we change the measure locally, it's just a change of normalization of the integral. OK, so how do we expand? We expand just, so let's me just consider what is the numerator, the quantity that. If I expand as a series in G, so I'm going to expand the numerator, which is integral d phi, so for the free field, exponential of minus 1 over h bar s0 of phi. I have an exponential of minus 1 over h bar g divided by factorial 4 integral dd of x of phi 4 of x. Okay, and then I have my products of my observable, phi of z1, phi of zn. Okay? Perturbation theory means that you expand this. You expand the expansion, and you write the exponential as sum of k from k equals 0 to infinity. And then I have, of course, a 1 over factorial k minus g divided by h bar factorial 4 to the power k. And then the power of this integral that I can write as integral dd of x1 up to dd of xk of phi 4 of x1 up to phi 4 of xk. Okay? And now, we may think that it's natural to just to invert the sum and the integral. So we go from an integral over d phi, a sum over k of term over the gk, to a sum over k of term over gk, integral d phi. Okay. In order to have a series in gk. Okay. So that's what we are going to do. But warning, this is dangerous. But be dealt with caution. So it makes sense, but this is dangerous. It's not obvious that we are allowed to do that. And one particular reason is that, in fact, of course, if we expand an exponential, this is a series of infinite degree, infinite radius of convergence. The exponential function of g times something is an entire function. It turns out that if you make the inversion of the order of summation and integration. This series is an infinite radius of convergence. And this series has a zero radius of convergence, which means that if you want to define this properly, you have to use resummation methods defined properly. So that's, there is a rule, well, old and well-defined with theory of resummation method for that kind of integrals. And you perhaps have seen them, because this problem is already present if you use, for instance, Stirling formula. That's one of the simplest examples where you need to use resummation method if you want to write the asymptotic expansion of the factorial, not only keeping the leading term, but all the order in 1 over n. So if you want to write the log of factorial n, if you want, as a series in 1 over n to the power k, then you met exactly the same kind of problem. So it's classical mathematics. It's basically 19th century, beautiful, but 19th century mathematics. And well, there has been development in the 20th century, but don't be afraid. There is a problem, but this problem is under control. But it's important to remember that there is a problem. OK, so if we, now, we perform naively this change, and of course, what we get is that this is equal to sum over k from 0 to infinity, 1 over factorial k minus g divided h bar factorial 4 to the power k, and then a functional integral, which is integral defined 0 of phi exponential minus 1 over h bar as 0 of phi, the action of the free field, times this object. So I get an integral. Oh, and I can, yes, and I get, and now I have this integral, so I can write this as an integral dx1 up to d, I'm sorry, dx1 up to dxk. And then I have a product of phi and phi 4 operators. So what I get is phi of z1 up to phi of zn, phi 4 of the x1 up to phi 4 of xk. Okay, so that's for the numerator. Okay, and you see that this is just the functional integral of some integral of products of fields operator relative to the free field theory. So you can rewrite this as the partition function for the free field theory that I'm going to write z naught is just this integral times this integral divided by z naught, which is integral dx1 up to dxk, the expectation value of phi of z1, phi of zn, times phi 4 of x1 times phi 4 of xk, evaluated for the free field. This is the free field expectation value. Okay? Is this clear for everybody? So this was for the numerator. For the denominator, it was the same things except that there is no phi, but the phi 4 operator are still there. So what we get as a final result is that final result the expectation value of phi of z1, phi of zn in the interacting theory. There is no knot, so it means that we're computing in the interacting theory, is equal to a perturbative series on the numerator, sum from k equals 0 to infinity, 1 over factorial k minus g over h bar factorial 4 to the power k, integral dx1 up to dxk, this object, phi of z1, phi of zn, phi 4 of x1, phi 4 of xk, divided, we still have to expand in power of g the denominator, so we have a similar series, sum from k equals 0 to infinity. We have a 1 over factorial k minus g divided by h bar factorial 4 to the power k. We have the integral over the k internal phi 4, but then we have two expectation value of phi 4 of x1, phi 4 of xk. And these two expectation values are computed with respect to the free theory. Okay, so this is very standard, but that's okay. And we get this formulation simply by assuming that we can invert the integral, so the summation of the field configuration and the summation of the series expansion of the exponential. Okay. Okay. And, well, up to the fact that we are computing these expectation value using a path integral or functional integral formalism, I think that you see that it's the same kind of argument that you used in canonical quantization. So, okay. So, this is the basis of perturbation theory. And now, of course, as you know, we can use the Wick theorem to compute these correlation functions, these expectation value in the free theory, so in the vacuum of the free theory, using representation, propagator, and Feynman diagram. So we end up with a diagrammatic presentation in terms of the famous Feynman diagrams and Feynman amplitudes or integrals. Okay, by just using this, we have some phi, and then some phi four, expectation value, where this is, you have n terms like that, and you have k terms like that. We can use it as a sum of pairings of some phi, zero, etc. Phi zero, and of course, you have n plus 4k phi, so you have n over 2 plus 2k propagators. Okay? And then you have to integrate. So this will be a well-defined object. Well-defined object. And then you have to integrate it over the position of the internal, what's that called, the internal points associated to phi 4. And this may, in fact, do diverge at short distance. Because we have seen that the propagator has those objects have short distance singularities. It's called ultraviolet singularities. And this is the program for normalization theory to see how, if and how we can deal with this problem and define a quantum theory. Okay, so each single, you know, integral here, well, this quantity is a function of all the points, it's well defined, but you have to integrate. And okay. So we are going to discuss that, and let me just give a few examples. So, okay, so first, let's go to the denominator. So this term, the denominator are called the contribution of the vacuum diagram. Okay? And so the first term is just k equals, so we have n equals 0 if you want. And the first term is k equals 0, k equals 1. So you have the term k equals 0 gives 1, just number 1. The term k equals 1, you have to integrate minus g divided by h bar factorial 4, integral dx1, and the expectation value of phi 4 of x1. Okay? So you have 4 phi. You can represent this by this. You have a point here, x1, with 4 phi attached, and you have to apply VCOM. So you can draw a propagator between the first point. So we can write this like, let us write this object as phi 4 of x 1 1, I'm sorry, phi of x 1 2, phi of x 1 3, and phi of x comma 4, with the constraint that the point x 1 1 is x1 is equal to x12 equal x13 equal x14. I'm just labeling the 4 phi, but it's independent of the labeling. And then VCOM means that you can make this pairing, or this pairing. Okay? So we get minus g over factorial 4. Okay, so there is one h bar. So each propagator, so it's phi phi, as we have seen, is h bar times the propagator between the two points, is my notation. So I have an h bar squared, and I have an integral over x1, which is an integral over all the points. And then I do have just g naught of 0, because it's x1 minus x1, squared, where g naught denotes the propagator of the free field theory. Okay, and in this diagrammatic representation, I can write this as minus g divided by factorial. Oh, and I have three contributions, so I have three times this. So I get minus g over factorial 4 divide times 3 times h bar, because I have h bar squared divided by h bar, and I have the contribution integral over x1, and I have a contribution of this diagram. So this diagram means that you have two propagators that start and end at the same point, so g naught at zero or zero distance, attached to the same point, and we integrate over dx1. Okay, so that's a Feynman representation. And we have this diagram. Okay? And you see immediately that this object is already singular because G naught is infinite if the dimension of space-time is larger or equal to 2. We have seen it's a log of 0 or 1 of 0 or 1 over. So we have an ultraviolet singularity already at the level of the simplest vacuum diagram. Okay. And finally, you see that you get 3 divided by 4, so you get a factor 1 over 8 here, which comes from the normalization of the Kubrick constant and the combinatorics coming from the Vick theorem. And well, I'm going to explain that a bit later, probably tomorrow, but in fact, you can realize that this comes from the symmetries of the diagram. Because I took this, I paid attention in labeling each file. So it's a fiducial labeling. I could have labeled this to be 3, this to be 1, this to be 4, this to be 2. It would have been exactly the same results. But you see, so, but if I imagine that you label this, you can start from a vertex that is labeled with 1, 2, 3, 4. You see? And then I apply Vick theorem. Then I get I may get this diagrams, but I may get also these diagrams, 1, 3, 2, 4, and 1, 4, 2, 3, which are the same diagram up to relabeling. So that's the same diagram up to relabelings of the legs of the vertex. You see. So what is this 3 divided by factorial 4? So 1/8 was 3 divided by factorial 4. But I normalized G divided by factorial 4, because factorial 4 is just the number of possible relabelings of the vertex. You know, I start from this vertex with nothing attached. I label, but I could have labeled, take any label, so I have factorial 4, different way to label. Okay. And the 3 is the number of relabelings of the graph. That leaves, you know, that are different. No. If I imagine that I relabel, I exchange the labeling of 1 and 2. And the number, and 3 and 4, or 1 and 2, so 1 and 2. Or I invert 3 and 4, or I invert 1 and 2 and 3 and 4. I get the same diagram, the same object here. But if I exchange 1 and 3, I'm sorry, 2 and 3, then I get this, which is different. You see? And so, this is, in fact, just this factor 1 over 8 is just 1 over the number of relabelings that do not change the diagram. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, and a combination of this and exchanging 1, 2 with 3, 4. So this is there is Z2 symmetry, you take the product of those ones, and you get a group which has 8 elements. So this 1 over 8 is the number of possible relabeling of the legs of the vertex that do not change a labeled graph. So that you do not go from this labeling to this one or this one. So this factor here has, in fact, a combinatorial interpretation in terms of group of symmetries of the diagram when you label. And here it's quite trivial, but it's useful when you go to higher order diagrams. Okay. Yes?
You said when G of 0 goes to him, you call it as a UV singularity, but does the singularity happen at low k, so is it still UV?
So, now your question is what do I do because of this?
It's a matter of name, but it is happening at low k.
No, this comes from the fact that, remember, G naught, I discussed that already last time. This comes from the large momenta or small distance. We have seen that G naught. We have seen that G naught of x behaves like x to the power 2 minus d. Or since it is a integral d dk divided by 2 pi d, small d, I'm sorry, 1 over k squared plus m squared with no, I'm sorry, if I consider g 0 of x equals 0, this integral diverges when k goes to infinity. So it's a divergence associated. So we are going to discuss that tomorrow. For the moment, I do as if this was not a problem, and I'm going to discuss the combinatorics of perturbative expansion. Okay. So what's the combinatorics of perturbative expansion? And I think it's time to. So let me just give you two examples. Now, so the vacuum diagram order 2 in coupling constant. Okay. So I'm going to have 1/2. This is the factorial 2 minus g over factorial 4. Squared. I'm going to have an I'm not writing the h bar squared. Then I am going to have an integral dx1 dx2, and I have phi 4 of x1, phi 4 of x2 evaluated at 0. Okay. And now if you apply Vick's theorem, you realize that you have now three different kinds of contraction. First, you may pair the phi here independently of the phi here. So you get the contribution of a diagram which is like this one. So here you have the vertex 1, and here you have the vertex 2. Okay? Then you may pair two of the phi here with two of the phi here. Then you get a contribution like that. Okay? And then you may pair each of the phi here with one of the phi here. And then you get this kind of contribution. Okay? So the contribution of this diagram will be just g of 0 to the power 4. The contribution of this diagram will be g of 0 squared times g of x1 minus x2 squared, because you have two propagators joining point 1 and x2. And this contribution of this diagram will be g naught of x1 minus x2 to the power 4. Okay? And now you count the number of ways you can construct this diagram, this contribution, and you check that this is going to be 1/2 × 1/8 squared. This is going to be 1/16, and this is going to be 1/4. And that's basically because here you have, 1/2 × 1/2. So this is 1/48, this is 1/16, and this is 1/128. That's more complicated. Okay. And then you have to integrate over the position of the points. So here you have a strong divergence because you have 4 times the divergence of G naught. Here you have 2 times the divergence of G naught. Here you have no divergence of G naught. But you have to integrate over the position of x1 and x2. And in fact, it turns out that there may be a divergence when x2 is close to x1. We are going to discuss that later. So these diagrams contain ultraviolet singularity. These diagrams may contain ultraviolet singularity, and this diagram is also has also ultraviolet singularity. Okay, so this is the first example, and let me finish the lecture by discussing the numerator during the last 10 minutes, say. Numerator. So I'm going to discuss the two-point function. So I'm going to discuss when n equals 2. So I'm computing expectation value of phi of z1, phi of z2, then some products of phi. So the leading term is the term with k equals 0. That's classical theory. So n equals 2, k equals 0. This is just the propagator of the free field theory. So this is, it is represented by this diagram. So this is z1, and this is z2. That's the object that we have already considered. Next one is n equals 2, k equals 1. And this is minus g divided by factorial 4 squared integral dx1 phi of z1, phi of z2, phi 4 of x1, computed in the free field theory. So we have now 1 phi at point z1, 1 phi at point z2, and 4 phi at point x1, and we have to compute the. So what we can do is, of course, we can pair all the phi here and pair this one to this one. So we get a diagram of the form the propagator times this. So this is z1, this is z2, and this is x1. So it's just basically the product of the amplitude of the propagator for the free theory times the first non-trivial vacuum diagram. But we may, of course, then it's more interesting. Pair this one to one of the phi here, this one to one of the phi here. And then we get the diagram, which is a contribution of this one. So this is z1, this is z2, this is x1. OK? So, of course, the contribution of this propagator is just z0 of x, z1 minus z2 times g0 of 0 squared, while this is and integrated over, with an integral over the x1. And this one is an integral over dx1 of g naught of z1 minus x1, g naught of x1 minus z2, g naught of 0, 1 g naught of 0. So it has an intra-traveled singularity. And then there is a convolution of two propagators. Okay? And you work out combinatorial factors coming from Vick's theorem. You discover that here there is a 1 over 8. So if I get rid of factorial 4, and here I get 1 over 2. So in fact, the total contribution is this times minus g. Oh, there is no square. It's just g, sorry. K equal 1. Okay. And basically, that's okay. And finally, well, perhaps we can. I can show you some pictures, and that will be a nice end. So, may I have the video? Thank you. So we are going to discuss that at length next time, and I presume you will recognize the diagram that you have met in the QFT1 course. We just have to wait. Well, you can have a look at them already. Okay, so this is, yes, okay, so this is the first vacuum diagram. These are the second order diagram in the denominator. And in the numerator, so this is an explanation I give. These are the two diagrams that appear in the two-point function, in the numerator of the two-point function that I just described in detail. And if you go to next order, okay, so you see that, for instance, this diagram and this diagram are connected. Well, this node is not connected because it's made out of two disconnected pieces, and that's going to be important. And now if you continue, here are the seven different kinds of diagrams that appear at second order in the coupling constant in the numerator of the two-point function. So you get some diagrams that are just the propagator, so this should disappear at some point. Why is there this stupid things? No, so that's not so. Okay, that's perhaps because I'm not doing the correct thing. No, that's this, that's what I did. Okay, no, here it is. Okay, so this is just the propagator times the vacuum diagram at order 2. This is the, this is stupid things. I shouldn't have, I know. Oh, no, that's because, okay, so this is the diagram times the vacuum diagram, and there are three new diagrams that appears by just two vertices. And this diagram has a combinatorial factor 1/4. This one has a combinatorial factor 1/4. And this one has a combinatorial factor 1/6. Do the calculation. That's an exercise. OK. And if I am not mistaken, now if you go to the four-point, the numerator of the four-point function, so at order 0 in perturbation theory, you get just the three combination of two propagators that you got in free theorem. So this is basically, this is Vick's theorem. And at order 1 in the perturbation theory, you get a bunch of diagrams. Those three ones are just the diagram of free theory times the vacuum diagram. Those six ones are basically the diagram of free theory where you replace one of the free propagator by one of the propagator with one at first order in perturbation theory. So they are not new with respect to what we did in the previous transparency. And this one is a new propagator that comes out of the fact that when you compute the expectation value in the free theory of four fields times 5-4 at the same point, you may pair this one with this one, this one with this one, this one with this one, and this one with the other, and you get this vertex, which is a cross where you have four propagators joining each of the external points to the internal vertex. Okay. And remember, for instance, for this diagram, the amplitudes of this diagram is the product of the four propagators integrated over the position of the internal points. Again, the external points that are in white here are fixed, but the internal point has to be integrated over. And I don't know what is the next transparency. So, okay, so that's what I explained. Okay, I'm going to discuss that tomorrow, the issue of what are four-point functions. But if perhaps I just have, I can show you some diagram which show you that when you go to next orders, for the four-point function, you have diagrams like this one, which is going to be important. And if you go to the six-point function, you get diagrams like that. So you get a lot of interesting structure that we are going to discuss tomorrow. Okay, thank you.